The Giant Mailbag opens. We're answering an insane number of questions covering an absurd number of topics. Richard Sherman, Julio Jones, Clay Matthews' future, why the Patriots are so well-built, who is the most overpaid player in the NFL, and should the Super Bowl be a two-week series? All that and so much more as we rip open the mail on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. It is here, the Giant Pool Party Mailbag Show. And my idea of doing the 27-hour show is dead. It was shouted down in our production meeting. But we are going to do a couple shows here. This is going to be an extended series of mailbag shows, I think. At least two, and we'll see what we get to, because we promised we'd do the iTunes questions. And we had a lot of other good questions that we liked as well. We got an obscene amount of questions, and we're going to get to as many as we possibly can over the next 2 or maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's called biting off more than you can chew, and we're going to try to swallow anyway.
Some might say we did not anticipate the consequences of the promises we made, but now we will make it right.
We got good questions. I thought we'd get a lot more garbage because we said we'd read them all. So I thought all the people that want to get their garbage out there and they know they normally get ignored, here they're going to come in droves. And we really only got like one or two of those, which I guess we're going to have to read.
I was shocked we were not, you know, whatever. We weren't forced to say horrible things. Pretty much everything that came in, 99.9% of it was good and legit. So just to set the scene, Andy and I are obviously we're poolside for this one because it is the summer fun show. If you ever seen Wolf of Wall Street, you know the house party, the pool party scene, it is exactly like that. Just so you have a mental picture as you listen to our answers here.
Gary, you and I had lunch at the Time Inc. building last week, and
yes,
you brought up another Wolf of Wall Street scene about 8 different times.
Yes.
I'm just letting people know this is becoming a pattern for you.
Yes, because I see one movie a year, and that was it this year. And on top of that, where we were eating is where they shot the yacht scene. So I wanted to point that out to Andy, a visiting tourist, that he was a part of movie history.
And you were right, and it was the same angle, too. You were right. It lived up.
Yes. Yes, it did. Well, let's jump in here. Like we said, we're gonna be a little bit more concise with some of your questions here. And those of you who asked 2 questions, for shame, we're probably just going to pick one of them to answer unless you really blew minds with both questions. But we're starting with Erkin Empire here. Pro Football Focus says James Bradbury was the best rookie cornerback, but the media seems to think it was Jalen Ramsey. What do both corners do better than the other? Andy, you can answer that. I think we're both in the corner of we like James Bradbury, but we like Jalen Ramsey more.
Yes, and I can certainly see how Bradbury would rate higher in something like Pro Football Focus, where they grade plays, and I can understand how that would come out, because he was very good at the top of routes, against the top of routes last season. So a receiver gets to the part where he's going to break back to the ball, or he gets to the point where he makes his move, ball's in the air. Bradbury, I thought, had an excellent feel for how to defend that, and that's important in a cover 3 scheme where you're a lone outside defender. Now, Jalen Ramsey, he also played in a cover 3 scheme, and he was incredibly up and down the first several months of the season, really. It was December when he came along, and the physical skill set that he presents, and this is why he was drafted high in the first round and Bradbury went in the later rounds, the physical skill set's off the charts. He has the best body I think I've ever seen on a cornerback, given that he runs well. He's almost like a David Johnson type out there playing corner. He's kind of built like that. He got better late. I think he's going to be a sensational pro. We're going off of upside there.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to, this is By Smitty. My question for you, as an Eagles fan, what cornerback could we get in a trade for Jordan Matthews, or are the Eagles better off waiting for Sidney Jones to recover versus trading for one of the corners that we will throw out there randomly. I mean, look, they drafted Sidney Jones high enough that they have a pretty big investment in him, and that's more of a medical question, and we'll see what he is when he comes back from the ruptured Achilles. I can't imagine we'd see him before midseason, and we probably won't see him at 100% until next year. But I don't know, Andy, do you have anyone you throw out there? I have no reporting to share on Jordan Matthews trade talks, but I can throw out a couple names. Do you want to throw anyone out there?
Well, it's interesting. A few things. It's interesting, one, that we're talking Philadelphia. They're mostly a zone-based defense. And as we've talked before in the show, kind of back to Carolina and the guy that Bradbury replaced, Josh Norman, teams that play zone do not typically prioritize corners. Remember, you can't have everything. You can't have everybody be a first-round pick. So you have to invest at certain positions. Teams typically don't play zone and invest at corner. But Philadelphia kind of did this year. They drafted Rasul Douglas in round three. You mentioned Sidney Jones. I think they're settled. I think they're set. And are they great at corner right now? Absolutely not. Jalen Mills, we'll find out more about him this year. And then who are the other guys? Where does everybody play? They're very much in flux there, but they've addressed the position. They have the young guys as part of that flux. The other thing I take issue with, Gary, is I would not trade Jordan Matthews. I don't think he's a great player. But they were asking him to be their best wide receiver the last couple of years, and that's where he didn't show well. Mm-hmm. He's going to be their number two now. I don't think Torrey Smith beats him out. I think Matthews is the number two behind Alshon Jeffrey. Could be a different equation with him in that role. He's very good on intermediate or shallow intermediate routes as a possession guy out of the slot.
All right. Yeah, you know, we talked about this earlier in the offseason, but, you know, I wonder if zone teams are just going to become less and less zone teams. I mean, that's sort of where the league as a whole is trending right now.
Well, if you can pressure the quarterback quickly, you can play zone defense. In fact, you'd like to, because if you're pressuring the quarterback quickly, I'm talking with a four-man rush here. If you're pressuring the quarterback quickly, the ball's out on your schedule defensively, and you've got guys in zone who have eyes on the ball and are able to jump the route rather than have eyes on their man that they're guarding in man-to-man. So it's all, and that's why these zone teams like these four-man, where they draft defensive ends, they invest in that position. Fletcher Cox is obviously Philly's most prized possession. They've paid him the most. They went out and traded for Timmy Jernigan. They've signed Brandon Graham, re-signed him for many years. So that's where they invest, because that's the type of defense that they are.
Can I throw out three names? Three names of cornerbacks. Where if I was,
oh, you want to do the trade speculation?
If I was sitting here playing Madden in my basement by myself,
yep,
working the trade builder here, I will throw out Brian Poole, because I don't know what they're going to do with him in Atlanta with all the depth they have at corner all of a sudden.
Okay.
I throw out Nevin Lawson, and I throw out Jimmy Ward.
Detroit's cornerback, and then who's the third one?
Jimmy Ward. Who they're moving to safety, which I'm not crazy about, but
well, I think I would be surprised if San Francisco, even though they're moving Jimmy Ward to safety, I'd be surprised if they wanted to part with him. I think he's a pretty nice player. He's got a lot of skills. They're just trying to find the best spot to play him in. Why Nevin Lawson?
I just threw it out there because I figured Detroit needs help at a receiver, even though Jordan Matthews is kind of more the same number two team of number twos at receiver.
Yeah, well, they drafted Golladay in the third round, and I think he's going to be an important piece for them because they need someone to fill Anquan Boldin's role. You're right, and Matthews is a better version of Boldin at this stage of both men's careers. So I get that. But, Gary, you almost never see guys get traded in training camp anyway. Football's too complex to plug and play guys like that.
Yep, indeed it is, unless you're playing Madden. Let's move on. Jonesy, 97822. Is there a reason Ted Thompson and Dom Capers do not place any emphasis on inside linebackers in Capers' schemes? I get prioritizing DBs, but there seems to be little to no investment in the position in a scheme that focuses on exotic blitzes when the center of the field gets routinely exposed. That's a good question. They've never made a huge investment inside linebacker. And in fact, it seems like when they have moved in past years, when they end up shifting Clay Matthews inside, he ends up he always looks like by far the best of the bunch.
Well, because he has been. And that's what's interesting is the premise of the question is correct. They don't, and they typically have fourth and fifth round type guys playing inside linebacker. And right now it's Blake Martinez, their fourth round pick out of Stanford from 2016 from last year, and then Jake Ryan, their fourth round pick from 2015. And they'll rotate Joe Thomas in there. He's a better athlete. He'll play in their dime packages. But they have not invested heavily at the position. Yet, when the position went really south for them a few years ago and they had to get better there, they put their best player there, and a guy from a very valuable position, their best edge rusher in Clay Matthews. So that's an interesting dichotomy. Here's what I'd say is that they do take corners and they do typically take defensive linemen. And the reason for that is because if you're an exotic blitzing team, you need to play man-to-man coverage behind it, because that gives you the most freedom for the different types of blitzes that you can draw up. The thinking along those lines is, if that's the case, then we can scheme the pressure to win. We don't need to have a dominant guy create pressure, because we're drawing up schemes that should work as long as the guy can just do what he's told. So it's the theory. The Falcons had this theory years ago when it was Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Nolan was running their defense at the time. It was they went out and decided, we're going to prioritize cornerbacks because we feel we can scheme pressure. Now, they do it differently in Atlanta now because they're more of a zone, straightforward type defense, so they want to get pass rushers who can do it on their own. But if you can scheme pressure, a lot of times the thinking is we can do it with regular players because the design will handle most of it.
All right. Before we rip open the next envelope here, we have an apology to international listeners, and that's a lot of you listening to this show. We didn't get your iTunes questions, and as we said, we would answer 100% of the iTunes questions, and we didn't realize we can't see them. We can see them in some countries, but if you're in a country that doesn't have enough iTunes reviews, like if you live on the island of Nauru and we're huge there, but there are only like a couple hundred people, so if there's not enough iTunes reviews, we can't see your questions. So we have a solution. It's going to take a second step, and we apologize for this. If you're an international listener and you haven't heard your question that you submitted on iTunes that we promised we would answer, screen grab it, tweet it at us, gramling_si or andy_benoit, or this might be even better, just send it to talkback@themmqb.com. You can also leave a really rude, profane message at me for not thinking this through before we made this promise. But we will get to it. And like we said, we're going to do a series of mailbag shows here. And starting with next week, Mailbag 2, Son of Mailbag, your questions will be in the mix. And if we go out to 3, definitely. We promise, if you do this and you're an international listener and you do this, we promise we will answer it.
If we see it. If we see it. We love our international listeners are very, they're analytically driven. They're very smart. We want to answer their questions. Not that we don't love the Americans as well. We're yes. American.
Yes. Andy, I think you would agree with me. The best country is USA.
Yeah.
There you go.
Rodrigo, thinking of all the consequences of answering that question, which I guess there aren't. I guess it's fine to say that still. Patriotism's fine. It's just
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I get nervous. Back to football.
It wasn't a trick question, Andy.
No, it felt like it, though. It felt like, and it just, yeah, I don't know.
You felt like I was going to be like, oh my God, you don't like Mozambique better? All right, back to the mailbag. This is Rodrigo Quintanar. And this is good. This is an extension of the Eagles question we just talked about. If defensive line talent is significantly better than offensive line talent as of now, which we've mentioned in the past, why haven't more defenses switched to zone coverage concepts?
And so that's a big time extension of what we just said, because the theory then is the 4-man defensive line can beat the 5-man offensive line, and so you're better off playing zone where the defenders have more freedom. I don't have any. I mean, that's. I'll give you one reason why. It's because in zones, you tend to be a little bit more predictable because there are rules to zone coverages. You have to play your zone. And the offense knows those rules, and they draw up plays that exploit them. That's the whole nature of building an offense. So zone, you have to play it really well. Now, that's true of anything in the NFL. But man-to-man, you tend to eliminate that gray area a little bit, because if your receiver can't beat the corner, it doesn't matter what play you draw up most times. 9 times out of 10, it won't matter. So that's the almost always, I think, a coach, a team, a defense would rather play man-to-man than zone, but it's hard to find enough man-to-man playing. You got to have five guys that can win. If one guy loses in man-to-man, you gave up a pass. So it's harder to play man-to-man defensively.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, as a simpleton, it's you can solve zone coverages as an offense. You can figure out how to beat it. But if you have five Darrell Revis in his primes at cornerback covering the five receivers, that's you can't solve that. Your guys aren't going to get open.
Really, this to answer this question, the ideal scenario, and this is when you're really talented, this is what the 49ers did when they went to the Super Bowl in 2012, and they had Aldon Smith, and Ahmad Brooks was at the height of his game, and it was a pretty rich defense. They had those linebackers, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, but what they did was play two-man. So man-to-man, rush four, and then the two-man part of that, those two were safeties over the top. So you had zone deep on the safeties over the top and man-to-man underneath everywhere else. That's the coverage everybody wants to play. That's a hard one because you're really reliant on that four-man rush. But we could see more of that if the defensive linemen keep outpacing offensive linemen like this, and they always will. Defensive linemen are 80 pounds lighter than most of these offensive linemen. They're just naturally, they're going to be better athletes.
All right. Next one coming from Lazy Goat 13. Your position rankings are not stacked. Player position rankings, I should say. Player position rankings are not stacked with Patriots, Brady and Gronk being two exceptions. Belichick appears to favor moving in and out fresh, very good players over paying expensive superstars. Is this observation correct? And do you have examples of other teams doing this? If so, I mean, that's kind of a trend across the league for the most part the last couple of years. A lot of teams won't, not everyone, but a lot of teams won't overpay for free agents. They'd rather draft and develop, and the Patriots tend to look for bargain basement type guys or veterans who are hungry for a ring, and that's sort of the guys they chase, you know, your Chris Long types. Or, I mean, they've had guys, you know, they had Chad Johnson in there, they had Albert Haynesworth in there, that didn't work out, but those guys are such low-risk signings for what they signed them for. But, you know, you mentioned it last week, you talked a little bit about, Rob Ninkovich, guys like that. The Belichick really does seem to maximize the guys he has.
He does. And by the way, how impressive is Stephon Gilmore to them that they would break their pattern and sign that guy to a mega free agent contract? What the New England Patriots do really well is they carve out specific roles for everybody. And so in the case of Rob Ninkovich, we need a guy who can set the edge against the run. That's what we're going to have. That's what he's going to do. He's not our wide nine pass rusher. So he's not he might play every down for him, but let's talk conceptually. They don't view him as an every down difference maker. He's a first and second down difference maker. So you're not going to pay that guy top dollar because you pay for every down difference makers. That's what you pay for top dollar. And that's kind of their theory and their MO. And it gets back to the importance of coaching. And I think what gets lost is the fundamentals factor. What stands out with New England, because they're not this, they don't have like play designs that no one's ever thought of before that just beat you and, oh my God, they're geniuses. They don't beat you geometrically like that. They can at times, but they're like anybody else. What they beat you at is consistency and execution of basic concepts. They don't miss tackles. They don't blow coverages. They do the little things correct across the board. And I would imagine some of that is because they're asking guys to do what they do best. They're not asking them to do a lot of things. They're asking them to do a few things really well for the role players. Now, also, Gary, I would argue if we were to do top 20 guys at positions instead of top 10, I bet you 80% of the Patriots starters would make that list. The Patriots are also very good at finding second-tier players. Think like Patrick Chung, those type of guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we got Chung got a vote in safeties. I think both Butler and Gilmore, while they didn't make the top 10 on corners, I think they were like 11 and 12 on the list, which, I mean, and look, the difference between number 7 and number 12 is not very significant. Yeah, and one thing, I'm stealing this from Albert Breer because he made this point in his analytics story a couple weeks ago. One thing the Patriots really do that's interesting on offense is you think about a defense's best cover man. Pretty much every defense is true with their best cover men play the outside. So the Patriots have put the strength of their receiving core with the tight ends and the running backs and the, you know, Edelman and the slot guys and stuff like that, and they're getting matched up a lot of times with your linebackers and your safeties and your guys you don't cover as well. So that's, you know, it's an efficiency that they find, and that's kind of why they're the best at doing the stuff they do here. But they do have talented players. They have really good guys on the maybe not elite level, but it's everyone is either very good or they're very good at what they're asked to do, or usually both.
Yeah. It's the way they use their players, and that's the Patriots. That's what makes them. So Julian Edelman, for example, Edelman's probably at the 20th best receiver in the NFL, let's say. But when you put Julian Edelman against a linebacker and give Edelman a two-way go, which a lot of their designs do, now Edelman's the third or fourth best receiver in the NFL. So they maximize their players by the way they line up and play. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Next question coming from Ivo610. Who do you consider the most overpaid players in the league, and why haven't they been cut? Cough, Clay Matthews, cough. That was him, by the way. That was not me. Clay Matthews, look, Clay Matthews was a little bit, he was interesting. He could have been cut, but, you know, it seems like, look, everyone plays hurt. Some guys play more hurt than others. He was definitely playing hurt last year, and it seems like the Packers are saying, we think he was playing hurt. We think he'll be fine, or at least much better this year.
Yeah, and I go back and forth on how much to evaluate player contracts. It's so much of it swings by the market, and watching the film, I'm almost never surprised when a guy gets paid. Like it's you can tell who's going to get paid what because you know forces of the market, and you can tell who ranks kind of where in the league. Brandon Linder the other day got a big contract. That's the first time in a long time where I've been blown away by what somebody got paid. I didn't see that one coming. So I don't pay a whole lot of attention to contracts and cap numbers and that stuff for those reasons. It's just, it's a lot of it's market driven. Can the guy play? Can he not play? That's how coaches look at it. I kind of like to look at the game that way, I guess. But the other thing to keep in mind is the money in the contracts is structured over many years, and there are cap consequences for this season and next season and the year after. You have to take a lot of variables into consideration, plus they're relative to everybody else's contract. So what happens if you cut them now, and maybe we want to cut this guy next year and cut that guy next year, but we can't do that if we cut Clay Matthews now, for example. I mean, there's a lot of variables that go into it. So I don't know who's overpaid and underpaid, to be honest with you.
I mean, all right, I'll hot take it. I'll throw it out. A guy like Tavon Austin, but they couldn't cut him this year. His contract is structured so that they have to have him through, I think, at least this season, maybe even next season. And they're going to have to figure out, Sean McVay will have to figure out what he wants to do with Austin. Seems like is that true, Andy? They want to make him more of a deep threat?
Well, I imagine McVay will say that. And that's how Austin's a complicated player because, for one, he doesn't run his deep patterns consistently. And some of it's just effort, to be totally frank with you. So that has to get corrected. It can be, but you've seen it enough now that you wonder what's going on there. I think he puts in effort. Being around the Rams, he was very studious. Mm-hmm. He was out injured the day I was there, but he was dialed in on everything. So I think he just has some bad habits as a route runner. But the other part with Austin is he's built for the slot. He's an Edelman type. I mean, he's that body type. Yeah. You're not going to put him up as an ex-ISO and ask him to beat press coverage outside. So he's an on-the-move type of player. He's not very patient. And so short area throws, like he could not play in the Patriots offense where it's option routes and timing and setting up guys. He doesn't have that kind of patience to his movement. So his skill set doesn't quite fit his body type for what he is in the NFL. That's why he's a complicated guy. And what's his contract, Gary? I mean, maybe your answer is probably better than mine. Is he a guy? What are they paying him?
So he's got it. Yeah, I mean, he carries a $14 million cap it this year, but there's enough money left on it that they'd be eating $19 million if they cut him. So they can't cut him. They can after 2018 is really their first really good opportunity if they want to get out, because all his guaranteed money is gone after 2018. But you know, he had 10.5 annually, a lot of guarantees. 28.5 guaranteed.
He's an example of a guy who's probably overpaid. And what often happens with those guys is there's a coaching staff change, which is what's gone on with Los Angeles. Yeah. And so your role becomes different because coaching really matters in the NFL. Coaching's how you bring cohesion among all 53 of your guys on your roster and how you build a team. So if he doesn't fit the new coach's approach, that's going to be a problem. I'm eager to see what he does for Los Angeles, how they decide to use him, because I don't think he's not quite Jamison Crowder, the slot guy that McVay had in Washington, and he's not quite DeSean Jackson, the deep threat that McVay had in Washington.
Yeah, the only guy I'd thrown out there, and I was not surprised Matthews was kept, and I was not surprised that this guy was kept, but I wouldn't have been surprised if the Steelers parted ways with Mike Mitchell this offseason. Safeties don't get paid a ton, but he's at the top tier of those safety salaries, and they did have an out this past offseason and chose not to use it. I mean, Mitchell's I think he's sort of an emotional and tangibles type of guy. I think he brings a physicality to that secondary. And look, they have a very young secondary, and it's nice to have a veteran presence down, you know.
And they absolutely value that in Mitchell, and they're not deep at safety. And they're also doing what I thought they should have done all along. When they signed Mitchell, I was surprised they had him at free safety. They didn't have a need at strong safety when they brought him in, but he's a strong safety. He is not a center field type guy, and you see that every now and then. I think the plan ultimately, and we'll see how long it takes to fully unfold, but the plan is for Sean Davis, their second round pick last year, to become the free safety, the new Ryan Clark of that defense, which would put Mitchell back down to strong safety. So they probably wanted the stability of Mitchell's familiarity if they're going to be moving guys around like that. He might be better at this new position if they can get to that. The Steelers don't do this stuff overnight. They ease guys into roles over many weeks. But I think Sean Davis ultimately will be the new Mike Mitchell in that scheme.
Yeah. As long as we're talking about job security and getting hired here, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then the powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. That is nice. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners for our show, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. All right, Andy, back to the mailbag. Next question. This is coming from Jorgman. Julio Jones is an elite talent with body size, quickness, hands, and speed combination that makes him a once-in-a-decade type wide receiver. Why doesn't Atlanta use him in the red zone? I've asked this for years. We talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago, Andy, and you said he's not necessarily a great back shoulder guy.
Well, I bet he would be, but that's not his game. He's not Jordy Nelson, where you throw back shoulder and he turns. Where he really beats you is on in-breaking routes, slant patterns, crossing routes, post routes, Well, in the red zone, those in-breaking routes become less available because the safeties play so much shallower mm-hmm. because there's no field left, and so the middle of the field gets crowded. So I think that's part of it, is just the way he's used in that offense doesn't translate quite as well to the red zone, so maybe that changes two or three would-be touchdowns a year. The other thing is Kyle Shanahan liked to do a lot of misdirection concepts in the red zone. And he was very, very good at it. And misdirection concepts, the ball tends to go to your running backs, your underneath tight ends, and your slot receivers in those. They don't usually feature the outside guy. My guess would be that's because the guy defending the outside receiver, he doesn't see the misdirection yeah. the same way. You don't get him moving one way and the other. He's way out on an island there. So I think it's just a coincidence, to be honest. I think it's the way they play and Jones's role in that offense. You can't be everything to everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. He maybe could, but they don't play that way. And I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah. Well, for those of us who play fantasy football, Andy, we worry about that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. That's a good point. That's an interesting point.
Next question here coming from, it's either Richard Snow or Richards Now. Because it's all in one word here with no capitalization. 32. Let's see. Only position coach you guys ever talk about much is offensive line coaches. What impact do other coaches have on the game, the scheme, and what does a position coach's duties over the course of a week typically look like?
Good question. Keep in mind, the position coach, that's who you're with most of the day if you're a player. So when we talk about guys developing, young rookies, so often we think we kind of give credit to the front office for some reason. Oh, they saw the potential in the guy. I don't think that's accurate. And then we give, or at least not as accurate as we make it out to be, and then we give credit to the head coach and then sometimes the offensive or defensive coordinator in their system. More often than not, it's probably the position coach that's factoring in most of that. When you talk to players, they usually mention their position coach first and foremost before they even think of their head coach or their coordinator even. So I like the question, and I think every position coach is valuable in the NFL. I think that is a really – and those guys get paid well too, not like players, but they get – I think within football, position coaches are extremely valued. And a lot of times, if you get a head coaching job, it comes down to who did the front office think you could get as your position coaches? Who could you hire? Who could be on your staff? That dictates a lot of who gets the head coaching jobs.
Yeah. Next question here coming, Matt from Buffalo. Why don't they make the Super Bowl a 2-week event and do a home and home series with aggregate scoring? More ads, more publicity, more money. That would be really cool. It's a very soccer way of thinking, but that would be very cool.
It'd be chaos. I mean, there's a lot of planning that goes. I mean, I don't know how serious he is. Is that a serious question, you think?
I would imagine that Matt is probably not picketing outside Park Avenue. Maybe he is, but I would guess
NFL
probably not.
NFL offices there?
Folks, he's from Buffalo, and folks from Buffalo are pretty sharp, so.
Would his teammate have lost the Super Bowl 8 times then in the early 90s in a row? Like, how does that even get...
No,
you
still, at the end of the second week, you would,
that would bring
up a lot of questions. Do you want to play the, you know, if you're doing the aggregate scoring, do you want to play at home or on the road first?
Okay.
And could you imagine, for people like us, could you imagine the week between the two games, media blitz going on?
Well, it'd be interesting because... You'd take what happened in the first. I mean, it'd be the ultimate strategy week because you'd take what happened. It'd be like a 7-day halftime essentially.
Yes.
You take what happened in the first game, analyze it, and see who comes out differently. You're right. I mean, I personally would be fascinated to see a team play another team in back-to-back weeks like that. That would be interesting. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess all right. We should be in support of that whole thing.
I would
the Super Bowl.
I will never see it, but I would love to see that. That would be really interesting. And look, on top of that, we always talk about, you know, the Super Bowl is such a weird game with the extra long commercial breaks and the super long halftime, and guys talk about that all the time. So it's like, I don't know, why not? If you're gonna do it big, do it really, really big.
It's an interesting premise. It'll never happen, of course, but it.
Someone in Park Avenue is listening to this
than it did up front.
Yes, yeah, and scratching their chin and looking up to their left thoughtfully, I like to think. Next question is coming from Ross Brendel. Who are some of the young defensive players you anticipate could break out this upcoming season? What do you think?
Ooh, well, we talked about Jalen Ramsey. He's the first one that comes to mind. Oh, boy, young defensive players.
I want to throw two names at you because I'd be very curious about these guys. One is Leonard Floyd, who obviously flashed last year.
Floyd would be my answer for edge guys. I think he was – he did flash. He has great bendability and closing range as an athlete. He plays longer than his body type. I really, really, really like Leonard Floyd.
I think he's a rising superstar. I think he's a guy who came out of Georgia as a sort of a raw athlete type of guy. And I think his second year under Vic Fangio here, I think he has a chance to be I'm not going to say he's Von Miller, Khalil Mack, but I think he's right there in that second tier of guys. The other guy I'm going to throw at you, Andy, and this is, you did not see this guy on film last year, but I'm wondering if you have any intel because you've spent some time in Arizona, is Robert Kimdiche.
Oh, yeah, and Kimdiche. I know they like him a lot, and they believe he will take that next step. Now, he probably has more than just one step to go. I mean, he was underwhelming as a rookie and not totally unexpected. He came in pretty raw. He had some maturing to do. The guy they also like there is Rodney Gunter next to Nkandiche, and they feel those two guys can replace Calais Campbell, essentially, and that's a tall order. But Gunter, I just went through my Cardinals notes the other day from last year, and Gunter really stood out in the last part of the season. He had a very good December for them. He's good on every down. He's a three-down player.
Peter King has a great Gunter story that he's been thinking about on and off for a couple years, and he's got to write it because it's an amazing story, but I'll just tease it that way. And if he never writes it, I will spoil it on this show at some point.
He was just in Arizona, and he still hasn't written it yet, huh?
Well, he got this before Gunter. I mean, he got this during, like, Gunter's first training camp or something like that before anyone knew who he was.
Gunter, he was, what is he, about like, this third guy. Year, fourth year? Gunter's fourth year now, I think.
I want to say it might be third coming up. Okay, I'll look it up real quick.
Young.
But yeah, he basically had this story. And the reason we held it back originally was we were kind of like, well, you know, who knows? This guy might not even see the field as a rookie here, so maybe we just don't do it right now because, you know, it's sort of going to be spoil it.
Peter's going to have to do it now because people are going to go sniffing around for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. If I just forced him to do this story that I've been dying to read, then that's good. But yeah, this is year three coming up for Rodney Gunter. Andy, before we move on, we have some more friends, the folks at Barbasol. I use Barbasol, so I'm excited about this.
Yeah,
the
me too.
The biggest thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream is also the only thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream. Introducing new Barbasol razors, the brand America trusts for a close, comfortable shave, now has premium disposable razors. Barbasol's close shave technology on every razor means you get an advanced pivoting head and ultra-thin open flow blades. The Ultra 6 Plus razor also features a seventh blade specifically designed to refine and style tricky areas like under the nose, sideburns, and beard. Visit Barbasol.com and get a $2 savings coupon and see for yourself why Barbasol razors are the number one new disposable razors out there. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. I also have very sensitive skin, so I appreciate the Barbasol shaving cream. I've used it forever.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about the razors.
Too. Sensitive skin stinks. Andrew Luck has sensitive skin. That's why he doesn't shave during the season, because I guess it rubs your chin strap really bad. So he shaves in the off season, but when he's going to be wearing a helmet, that's why his beard just gets longer and longer, because he doesn't like to shave. Now, he could trim his beard down, though. He could still put some effort in and keep it lower cut or sleeker looking than it does.
I'll get him some Barbasol blades here. He'll be set. That's interesting. I didn't know that about the beard. I thought he just grew the beard because it's a thing to do now.
No, that is not a thing to do. Not that beard.
All right, next question's coming. This is Bubba Joe Tucson. I'll agree with Andy that Richard Sherman had a down year in 2016 for Sherman. But considering the specific skills, which by your own admission are top 2 to 3 in the league, that would be referring to Andy, the downfield stuff on the boundary. It is hard to imagine he is not top 15 in the league by Andy's ranking. What gives? Are you a hater, Andy? Andy is a hater. But
I am a hater. Well, yeah. All right. I mean, I had him 16, so I guess you could move him up one slot and we could just make the whole question go away. I've heard a lot about Richard Sherman this week because people didn't like where he was in the MMQB 400. Mm-hmm. The weakness has been exposed. He's not good against in-breaking routes. Now, the question, and we've been over this, the question is, was it his knee last season that exacerbated that? Or is he one of these guys where if he gets a little bit older and he loses 5% of his game, he loses 30% of his effectiveness as a consequence? I mean, he might have a very delicate tipping point. We will find out. I'm eager to see. I hope he's still effective. He's not even in his 30s yet, I don't think. So I want to see Richard Sherman thrive. And if he is healthy and plays like he did in 13, 14, 15, then, yeah, he's a top five cornerback.
All right. Next one is coming from 2X Impact. This is a good meta question here. I've watched football my whole life and slowly learned not to take any stock in preseason games when trying to determine the value of a team in the upcoming season. But lately, I'm beginning to believe that the first month of the regular season is just as meaningless in proving who the best teams are. Case in point, at the quarter point last season, the three best teams were Denver, Minnesota, and Philadelphia. All ended up being pretenders. Week one starts. Most teams are full strength with a whole offseason to strategize for the season ahead. Why isn't the first 4 weeks more indicative of who the best teams are? Is it really just training camp time limitations? What do you think about this, Andy?
I don't think it's training camp limitations. It's a season-long process, and you unfold and you grow over the course of the season. And what, like, back to New England, one thing that they do is grow their scheme over the course of the season. So they treat the whole season as one long extended training camp almost. They don't come into the season and here's everything we do, we're going to do this really well. It's a continuing process. So, yes, September can be misleading, or really misleading is the wrong word, because those teams that were hot, Minnesota, Denver, Philly in this example, they were genuinely good in September. They were winning those games. Those were full NFL games. You game planned, everybody played, mm-hmm. and you could argue they're even purer games because guys are healthier. So it's just a season-long process, and the teams that get gradually better over the course of the season, those are the teams that do well in the playoffs.
Yeah, and look, look at the Vikings. Depth plays a big role. Teams that are deep tend to be good. I mean, if you have a catastrophic injury, you lose your quarterback or something, that's one thing. But the Vikings lost some guys in the offensive line, and they didn't have the depth to make up for it.
And when you lose guys all at the same position, that's the fastest way to get derailed.
Yeah.
If you can't have, especially a reactive position like linemen, where you don't scheme stuff with your linemen. They have to block and react to stuff. So, which means if you're weak at one spot along the offensive line, the defense will scheme ways to attack that one spot. You can't hide it very easily. That's true at the cornerback position as well. So teams that lose a bunch of guys at the same offensive line position or at the same position in the secondary, mainly cornerback, that will derail your season very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I get 2XI's point, and certainly the teams that are, I guess if you're going to go 4-0 over the course of a month, you're better off doing it December than September, or at least if you're a fan, you'd rather see that. But, Minnesota's a great example.
I take a little bit of umbrage with that. People view it that way, but those games count the same in the standings.
They do,
September,
yes.
December, they're equal games.
Yes. But, a team like Minnesota that they had to – I mean, the Vikings had to completely revamp their offensive scheme midway through last season. So now you almost have to press the reset button and it's like you're back in training camp, but now you only got 1 week instead of 6 weeks to prepare and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Healthy teams have an advantage in the NFL. That's I struggle with this one. When I watch film during the season, guys go down and you think, oh man, the league's not going to be the same. There's a ton of injuries this year. What's going on? This stinks. Well, what really happens is just it is next man up, and other guys become the stars, and the game shakes out differently. And what you learn is the difference between good and great in the NFL, it's a lot thinner than you'd guess. These are all professional athletes. They're all tremendous. That's how I view it during the season. But then when I go into the off season and I study it closer, and I probably only watch in total 12 games in the off season, but I watch them 30 times or whatever with the coach. I mean, you're watching it differently. I think personnel is hugely important. And when you hear what coaches do behind scheming and why they did this and that, and they give me all the answers, it's like, goodness, if you have a backup in, that's a big, big difference than having a starter in. So,
yeah,
health is an underlining issue on almost everything we've been talking about, and especially when you're talking about how good you are in September versus December.
Yeah. This next one is coming from Adam Amb, and I am very curious about this because, and certainly anyone who plays fantasy football will be very curious about this. Now that Brandon Cooks is in New England, do you think Mike Thomas will have a big year? Or Michael Thomas, I call him Michael Thomas, not confuse him with the other Mike Thomases in the league. Big year as the best receiver on the team, or do you think his numbers regress with the amount of attention opponents will be able to pay to him? And I would add as a little addition to this question, Andy. I mean, Thomas had big numbers last year as a rookie, and you seem to like him but not love him type of situation. And why?
He's
That's
not,
my question.
Yeah, he's not super explosive, but what he is very mechanically sound. He is a deliberate receiver. He has an understanding of route running now, this early in his career, that some guys never reach. And
yeah,
that's going to make him very effective in New Orleans' scheme. And Drew Brees is really going to trust him, and he's going to become the go-to guy. So defenses might focus on him differently, but that's such a finely tuned machine in that system in New Orleans. He'll still get his numbers. He'll still get his numbers.
Okay. Now, is there anyone he reminds you of when you look back? Because when I see him, I think sort of, high floor, I don't want to say low ceiling, but, he's not Julio Jones ceiling type of thing. No one's Julio Jones ceiling,
yeah,
but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, because Thomas has to win with his skill set, so his route running. He's not going to just run by you. He's not going to beat you consistently on dig routes necessarily, where you stretch the field and your athleticism takes over. He's a refined player, so I'm trying to think of who some of the refined possession targets over the years have been. One idea that comes to mind, like Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald, if you were to combine their style of play, mm-hmm, he's a less athletic Fitzgerald, a more athletic Boldin, but he runs the routes that they've run well. I think he's similar on some of those types of routes.
Okay. That's good. That's a really good answer, Andy. Thanks. This is going to be the last one. Like we said, we didn't literally get to every question that we promised we'd answer, but we will have more mailbag shows coming up literally next week. Like, this isn't one of those, we'll do another mailbag show in March. We will pick this up, part two, Son of Mailbag, coming next week. But for now, this will be the last one. This is AKX Breed. How confident should I be about the direction John Elway is taking the Broncos in with his coaching hires and the QB situation? Do you think Paxton Lynch will work out, or was that a wasted pick? Andy, you can go first on this.
Well, it's a little early to say.
Yeah.
They knew what they had in Lynch. He's raw. He needs time. He needs refining. That includes in the way he throws the ball, and especially in the way he behaves in the pocket, so to speak, his pocket presence.
Yeah.
So everything's nothing unexpected has shown up with Lynch yet, and they knew that. So I would be fine with Denver and how they're building things there. Vance Joseph is an interesting hire because he's different than what Wade Phillips was philosophically, and what will that mean for how they play? But John Elway's had a lot of success as a running the front office there, and I think
yeah,
you could even make the argument when you combine what he did as a player and early in his career as a raw talent, then late in his career as an established veteran leading a team more as a complimentary guy, Super Bowls, appearances at all stops, two wins in the end, and now as a front office guy, what he's doing there, I think you could argue he's the most successful all-around professional football guy maybe of all time.
I mean, you could say he's going to be he's sort of on pace to be a Hall of Fame executive at this point.
Yeah. Would they put a second, like, would they put an older bust of him in, like the old man Elway bust,
as the executive
next to the player? Can you make the Hall of Fame twice in two different ways?
You know, that whole thing is new, but I think they would. We'll have to ask Peter about that. I want to ask you just specifically about Lynch. Well, this is more around Lynch than anything. And tell me this is unfair, or tell me if this is unfair, because this is my take on it. In Mike McCoy, who's obviously responsible for Paxton Lynch at this point, I feel he's shown in the past he's very flexible with the way he develops quarterbacks and the different things he will do with them and the way he will sort of design something to their strengths. You know, whether it be, you know, McCoy was there when it was Tebow, and McCoy was there when it was Kyle Orton, yeah. and they were still all right and that sort of thing. Whereas last year's regime with Gary Kubiak has sort of always done that same thing. I feel like it's a little more firm in what he did, a little less flexible than maybe what a McCoy would be. And I think it's, you know, certainly at this point in Lynch's career, I think that's where that's the kind of coach you want to have, a guy like McCoy who can play to his strengths a little bit more with what he does, a little more fluid with what he does.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I was a little surprised that Kubiak, you're right, he's always been a zone movement coach. So the zone running game and then a play action game or a passing game built off of that zone look and those zone formations. He got away from that a little bit last year. They weren't quite the zone overall passing game, so to speak, that we've mm-hmm. come to see from Kubiak over the years. It doesn't matter now. You're right. McCoy's the guy there, and he has been flexible over the years. So Denver's in a decent spot. They have two young quarterbacks, and they really can just go with whoever plays better is going to get the job. They're going to be the guy on the field. This is actually a true quarterback competition. And I think if Trevor Siemian wins it, I think they'll go with Trevor Siemian. I don't think Lynch has an edge just because of where he was drafted. And that comes from John Elway's security in his job. He just got promoted. He signed a new deal. Mm-hmm. He's the legendary guy in Denver. If he whiffs on a first round pick and he has to play, what was Siemian, his sixth round pick? If he has to do that sixth, seventh round, whatever, he can live with that. He can he'll eat that humble pie.
All right, Andy, that's a wrap for now. Like I said, next Mailbag Edition coming up next week. We will get to all these questions, we promise. We'll get to the ones that we promised we'd answer. We'll get to the good ones that came in through other avenues. I guess you can keep sending questions. If you leave an iTunes review and leave a question, we will answer it. And if you are international, like we said, sorry about that. You're going to have to screen grab the question and then email it. Email it to talkback@themmqb.com and we'll see it. And sorry for the extra step. I am not smart. Thank you on this show to producer Lou Pellegrino and editor Chris Basil for pulling this all together for us. Digital media really is the best at what they do. Mostly, thank you to you guys for listening to the Mailbag episode and to every episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. We really love you guys. You guys are the best. These questions are amazing, and it's good to have smart listeners who can make the show better here. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys more Mailbag next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.